In this week's Classical Music According to Yehuda, Dr. Alan Chartok and Yehuda Hanani discuss the cultural education of Yehuda's Asian students before hearing the theme from Paganini's Moses Variations.
Yehuda Hanani, the last time we spoke, you talked about how you went to China and you tried to lecture on Shostakovich, and they told you what your limitations were, what you could say and what you couldn't. But now you have Chinese students, a lot of Chinese students, studying with you here in the States. And I believe you once told me about half your students were
Chinese. That's right, yes.
How does that work when they come into a free culture like this?
It's quite fascinating because I find myself changing my style of teaching. Now, music is part of a large cultural picture. It's a mirror of our history, of our civilization. So if those students acquire just the digital, physical technique of playing an instrument, it's minus the background, minus the complete package, it's like an empty shell, a shell without the egg.
I hear you, but I wanted to ask you something, because you've talked before about your Chinese students, your Japanese students. Classical music is, to my understanding, doing much better in some of these countries than it is here. And I often wonder why that is in a top-down system, which Communist China certainly is, one can understand authority and being important. Japan is less clear to me, and I wonder if you talk about that.
It's fascinating because whatever you say about the communist regime, they take from us the best we can offer. So they will imitate certain patterns.
The challenging that we can offer. There's nothing really challenging about classical music.
It's not politically charged.
But if you get a rap song talking about what's going on in the street,
I was invited to a semi-legal jazz club when I was in China, and those were the young kids, and they were growing their hair long, and they were doing all the things that the government would not approve of.
Yeah.
So classical music is safe. And they can, digitally, they can do it very beautifully because they have a very special gift of brain-to-finger connection. So many of them are Yo-Yo Ma, Lang Lang, all those players have a fantastic facility. And I don't know, we would have to ask a doctor or someone who really knows.
A geneticist.
Yes.
I have my doubts about what you're saying here, but what can I say? Let's just go on.
Or maybe it's the discipline, maybe it's the determination, but they're doing very well in this respect.
Okay, so they're over here, they're studying with you.
But they follow me after my visits to China, and as you said, the class is more than half Chinese. But the gestalt, the background that we have is, it's like, if you walk into the Metropolitan Museum, into the Greek wing, the Greek antiquity wing, without any knowledge of Greek mythology, so you'll have a certain, it will yield a certain limited kind of appreciation at the best, or a misinterpretation altogether of what you're seeing. So, and so much is embedded in the language. I like to speak very poetically when I speak about music. So the language itself is already evocative. I mean, the word music alone comes, music or museum, comes from the nine muses, the daughters of Zeus, or the goddesses of the arts. So I had to change the way I communicate. I find myself speaking more prosaically, sort of language without overtones, so to speak. I cannot say to a Chinese student, this piece is an odyssey. I can't, because then I'll have to sit down and tell him about the Odyssey by Homer. Or I cannot use the Nietzschean concepts of Apollonian and Dionysian. So all of a sudden you find yourself talking about things that are very special for you, very dear to you, in a very crude language. There are some phrases, some cases where a phrase ends with a note that also begins the next phrase. It's like in writing, the last word of one paragraph will be the first word of the next paragraph. And I like to call these notes Janus notes, because the Roman god Janus had two faces, one in front, one in the back. And so all these things I cannot, unless I sit down and I tell them about mythology, about
But what do they want to know about? Do they want to know about fingering and vibrato and the rest
of
that?
They expect to be told how to play music the way you train a person for the Olympic Games.
Sure.
And it doesn't work this way. So, and the availability of CDs and YouTube now makes it possible for them to observe. And they're very, very industrious, very, very, very serious to observe someone else doing it and bring me back sort of a Xerox copy of something that that is the product of someone else. And you right away notice that there's a lack of personal input. There's a lack of nuance, personal nuance in the performance. So, you know, you can steal a patent, you can steal a scientific formula, which they do. You can reproduce chemical products, you can duplicate a watch, you can design pair of shoes that you stole from, but you cannot do it with art.
But you can't say that about Yo-Yo Ma. I mean, here's...
No, Yo-Yo Ma is a product of the West. He grew up in France.
He can't have it both ways.
And he went to Harvard, and he understands Western tradition.
Yeah, so but you can't have it both ways.
I'm not speaking about the mind to finger
is the sort of typical thing you were talking about.
He's got this gift, but he also is fortunate enough to have grown up in Europe, in America, and you know, the other book that doesn't exist in China, we don't think about it often. It simply doesn't exist. Is the Bible.
Oh. I was going to say.
There's no religion in China. So, you know.
Oh, well, there's a religion, but we don't call it religion.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. So, you know, I cannot say to a student, I can say small and big, but I cannot say David and Goliath.
Sure.
Because there'll be no understanding.
Do all these students speak English?
They have a certain elementary level of English. They have to pass the TOEFL test.
Yeah, the TOEFL.
And for different degrees, there are different levels.
I remember the TOEFL test.
TOEFL test.
I always had the feeling somebody else took the TOEFL test for some
for
of these
people. Very true. You know, and then comes all the liturgical music that we have, and there's no end to it. You know, the creation of the world, and the last seven words of Christ, and the oratorio Elijah by Mendelssohn.
Well, in that case, you have to set context. So, what do they do?
They just play the notes, or Handel Messiah, for goodness sake, right? So, I had in a music situation just a week ago, a student comes very gifted, and he brings a set of variations on an aria from the opera. Rossini wrote an opera, it's called Moses in Egypt. Mm-hmm. And it tells the story of Exodus, basically. And one of the most beautiful arias is Moses' prayer before he crosses, before he divides the sea. There's a gorgeous aria. So Paganini took this one aria, and first you hear the very solemn, very dignified aria, and then Paganini turns it around and turns it into a sort of virtuosic, joking, flashy, showy kind of piece. And to make it even more showy, it's all on one string alone. The whole piece is written for one string. Yeah. So he comes and he plays it, and there is no solemnity in the first half. There is no joking in the second half. He knows nothing about what's going on. So I say to him, no, this is about Moses. And he says to me, who is Moses? And here I found myself, instead of giving him a cello lesson, giving him a Bible lesson before he could play the piece. So I brought this piece to conclude today's session. Thank you.
That was Alan Chartok speaking to cellist Yehuda Hanani in our segment, Classical Music According to Yehuda. For information about Yehuda's Close Encounters with Music series in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, visit cewm.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.